Was everyone able to take nice darshan? If you haven't, please do so. This is a most auspicious place. So many amazing and incredible pastimes happened here, especially the appearance of Sri Madhvacharya. As we have heard from His Holiness Srila Radhananda Maharaj in the last 2 days, narrating all the wonderful stories, and pastimes, and glories of Sri Madhvacharya. So we are at the Janmasthan, but it's also Karmasthan also, in that he performed many pastimes here. There are the whole Madhvacharya, and this area is very much connected to Sri Parasuram, also a plenary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu himself. So there are sounds like Money Ma, the snake is coming back. Maybe he reincarnated after being smashed. The place where he was killed is in this area also. Madhvacharya wanted to establish, and he did, the doctrine of Vaishnav Siddhanta in the age of Kali. And of course, he was speaking to his father. And his father was not only doubtful, but in denial, saying that in this age of Kali, it's not possible. It's such a bad age. And when we read the scriptures and we hear from the great souls, how bad this age is. Manda sumanda mateo mani bhagu upadutaha prayeno aprayesa sabda kalo yuge yusmin janaha manda manda sumanda mateo mani bhagu upadutaha. Sita Goswami explains in Srimad Bhagavatam that in this age is practically impossible to develop normal qualities, just to be normal. Normal means, you know, you're somehow or other have those qualities that are intrinsic in the human form of life, which is, you know, generally kindness towards others, generosity, concern for the welfare of others, able to maintain yourself, your family, and others, and to live in such a way that you can easily take care of your material needs and at the same time pursue the goal of life. That's considered to be normal, and according to Vedic culture, for the human existence. But in this age, there's so many difficulties. But it's amazing when you think about it, that the mercy of the Supreme Lord is even greater when the deficiency of the age becomes greater. In other words, as the ages become more and more degraded and the atmosphere becomes more and more polluted by sinful activities, and people develop these qualities, or not qualities, but activities that are sinful, which are seen to be normal. Prabhupada speaks a lot about this, how in this age, you know, to be able to destroy your opponent, to be arrogant, in other words, to be very successful in material acquisitions and material positions, and to develop a sense of arrogance based on that success, that's considered someone who's worshipable. We have King Ishvara, right? We were laughing at him, but he's actually a product of Kali Yuga. Persons like that, they may not be so ostentatious as the play was explaining, but in their hearts and minds, that's their mood. And that's how, not only in their hearts and minds, but how they act also. So this age of Kali is so bad. There's one verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 12th canto where it says, Kali Kaler, Kaler Doshanidhi Rajan, Asti Eko Mahamuram Kirtana Iva Krishnasya Mukta Sangam Param Bhaja. That despite, you know, this age of Kali is an ocean. Kaler Dosha Nidhi. Nidhi means ocean. Kaler, age. Kali Kale Nama Rupa. There's a dosha means faults. So many faults. Asti Echo. What is that Asti Echo? There's one goon. There's one great, big, bright light in this age of Kali. And that's to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting his holy names. But when we take that understanding to its ultimate, and as the Acharyas explain, to glorify the Lord is the process of purification. And by that process of purification, one can push back, not only push back, but completely eliminate within one's life and in one's influence around the effects of Kali Yuga. How powerful it is to glorify the Lord. Because the Lord is all glorious, and that is the best of all activities. Some great saints and sages, such as Madhvacharya, they come to teach how to glorify the Lord and how to live a life based on true philosophical teachings. And in order to do that, they have to eliminate what is, what we say, pretentious or incorrect spiritual understandings. This is the, before you can understand clearly what is correct, you have to understand what is not. And in this age of Kali, there are so many things that go on in the name of acceptability, successful activities, proper philosophical teachings, and advancement of social and human needs. But unless a great Acharya comes and says, this is illusion. This is Maya. This takes you away from the goal of life. This is contrary to the teachings of Shastra and the teachings of the Lord. We are still become affected by wrong teachings. So Madhvacharya, a great scholar of the Vedas, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in establishing his teachings as Achintya Beda Beda Tattva, he took two principles from each of the other, from the four sampradayas. And in Madhvacharya Sampradaya, he took two very main principles, which we see today. Srila Prabhupada was very much enthusiastic in establishing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's principles to somehow or other make these two principles very much foremost in our. And what was that? Worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his beautiful form as the deity, Archivigraha form, and complete refutation of Mayavad philosophy. What is Mayavad philosophy? We don't call it philosophy, we call it philosophy. It's something that is accepted by those who have no understanding. It sounds good, And Mahaprabhu also warned, if you're not fixed in the Siddhanta of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as being the cause of all causes and as the goal of the Vedas, then one hears this philosophy, one's spiritual life will go down. And if it continues, one's spiritual life will stop. So you need a great soul, great saint, to come and teach what is truth in opposition of what is not. You see, when such great personalities appear, they're challenged. Sometimes they're even attacked by the opposite parties because they have such a threat in the lives of others who are trying to establish their own wrong philosophies. We see that in the life of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, how he was so enthusiastic and very determined to rid all the misconceptions based on the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that had risen up in the last 150 years, or even longer than that, 250 years after the disappearance of Mahaprabhu. And he was attacked, he was also threatened, he was also tried to be killed by those who wanted to continue, the Smarta Brahmanas, the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, the Sahajiyas. So it's a risk to preach the truth. You're risking your life, especially if you're effective. Prabhupada used to say, if they knew what I was saying, they would try to kill me. Maybe they did know, but they realized Prabhupada was very old and soon he would leave. But Prabhupada was so strong. In fact, he took that same, what we say, power of philosophical knowledge and clear understanding of Shastra and applied it in a most amazing way in places that were completely impossible, such as the Western world, which is so steeped in ignorance and material existence. So we might say that actually Srila Prabhupada had that Shakti of Madhvacharya. And we see Madhvacharya, even him, he was so powerful, but he was challenged so many times. In fact, he made the first attempt to reestablish the true Siddhanta that the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity are actually two separate existences, one in quality, different in quantity. The Supreme Lord, the living entity, can never become the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is invested in the living entity through the power of his devotional service, still, that power is coming from the source and is not coming from the person who is using that power. We get so much power, but it's not our power, it's coming from God. But Mayavad philosophy says, you know, through austerities, through penances, through various types of study of the Vedas, then one who can become God. As Srila Ranganath Maharaj very nicely explained last night, how can you become God? God is already there. You can't become something that is already existing. And then when you actually hear such foolishness, even a child can understand that. But still, it is so nicely packaged in this philosophy that it sounds very convincing. That yes, I'm a spiritual being and actually I have forgotten my existence as the Supreme. And as soon as I remove the illusions that are covering that existence, then I attain my godhood again. One time someone said that to Prabhupada. He stood up in this assembly. Prabhupada was talking about Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead and very enthusiastically establishing it through philosophy. And one man at the end stood up and said, "I am God." Prabhupada said, "Please accept my obeisances. Now sit down." Mr. God. So this goes on, this idea. And another time, Prabhupada is using a point that, all right, you say you're a God, but we know another God. His name is Krishna. And he's more beautiful than you. He's got more power than you. He doesn't have to go to the dentist to get his teeth fixed. You know, he's perfect. So, although you're God, we accept this one because this one is more attractive than you. So, in so many ways, we can see how this Mayavad philosophy. And Madhavacharya, as he was traveling, he would meet great scholars of the Mayavad school. And they would also challenge. One time, in one debate, he was preparing with this debate with this very powerful scholar. I can't remember his exact name. But they had known Madhavacharya's reputation as a great, great proponent of the Dvaita philosophy. And so they were worried that he would defeat this. And when you argue, you have to back it up with scriptural references. And many times you need to have the books that are your references there at the debate to confirm what you're saying. So these assistants of this great pundit, they stole Madhavacharya's books. And therefore he didn't have the references with him. But still he entered into debate. And he was so learned that he didn't even need the scriptures because he had memorized everything. So when he was involved in this debate, he was quoting scripture perfectly. And it was able to defeat this Mayavad. Later on, his books were found and returned. So such a great acharya, when they come, they establish true religious principles and they remove irreligion from the world. But when they leave, then irreligion, which is a feature of the age of Kali, which is a feature of the material energy, but especially a feature of the age of Kali, starts to rush back in with great force. So therefore, in order to keep the Siddhanta and the clear understanding, they leave behind works of their writings and teachings for our benefit. And what is that benefit? That we can understand what is the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? It's amazing. Srila Prabhupada, in the mood of Madhvacharya, he has that mood of Madhvacharya. We carefully examine Srila Prabhupada's teachings. He spoke about Krishna using the term Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it was recorded, he said it 8,000 times. 8,000 times in Prabhupada's lectures and in his books. He used that term, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He wanted to make a point that God is a supreme person. He has a form, he has qualities, he has attributes, he has activities, he has names, and all these characteristics and qualities of him are unlimited. And he is unlimited in himself also. And Prabhupada showed us, through the process of devotional service, what is the nature. Therefore, he established so many temples around the world to worship and honor Krishna in his form as the deity, like that. So we could actually see Krishna in his transcendental form as Archivigraha, decorate him, worshiping, offer prayers to him, serve him in so many ways. And that way our minds would become clarified of this impersonal and Mayavad philosophy. Because it's so rampant in this age, this mood of impersonalism. You find it everywhere. It manifests itself in the element of activities as we treat each other according to how we interact with each other in a personal way. That is also a reflection or an understanding of our conception of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when we use or exploit others for our own sense gratification, that's a form of impersonalism. Not understanding that that person actually is part and parcel of Krishna and is loved by Krishna completely and perfectly. So this impersonalist mood manifests itself in this age of Kali on how each people relate to each other, which is very exploited and very, what we say, what's another, exploitative, and at the same time, very much seeing that I am the center. Everyone wants to put themselves in the center. And that is a form of impersonalism. So therefore, when the great acharyas come to establish teachings, they leave behind many, many volumes of knowledge so we can clearly understand. And Prabhupada said that. And you read it also in the books of Madhvacharya, that the conclusion of all Vedic knowledge is to worship Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotion. Everything else is leading up to and supporting that one principle, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are his servants eternally, and he is the cause of all causes. And there is no other goal in life than to realize that through knowledge and through practical lifestyle. So where do you find such teachings? Only in great souls who appear. So Madhvacharya, when he came here, he wanted to establish that. He said that to his father, I am going to establish the truth of Vaishnava Siddhanta in this age of Kali. His father was doubtful. Not doubtful. He actually said, it's impossible. He had this stick, some people call it a baton. He put it in the ground immediately. Oh, his father said, just like if you plant that stick in the ground, a tree will immediately grow. That's how impossible it is to establish Vaishnava culture in this age, Vaishnava teachings. So what he did, he took that stick, it's called a baton, some people say it was a bamboo shoot, and he put it into the ground. Immediately this creeper, immediately, not later, immediately this creeper grew. It's in the form of this banyan tree in the back there. One demon called Manima, and we hear about him in a couple of the pastimes with, he became envious. He was Kali Yuga personified. So he attacked this growing shoot and he tried to kill it by biting it, but it had no effect. He was completely ineffectual in trying to destroy this creeper that had grown immediately by the presence of money and by the presence of. So the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests itself in these great souls. in their full expression of their devotion, manifested in various forms of their existence, such as their knowledge and their activities. So, Madhvacharya, we've come to this holy place. This is the place of his appearance. We take the dust of this place. We worship Madhvacharya. We honor him. But most of all, we learn. We learn. This is the benefit of this yatra, to come to the holy places. Just by coming, you become purified. By associating with devotees in the mood of service and friendship, that benefit is increased more and more. And by hearing the glories of these personalities, that benefit is taken to a higher and higher level of purification and happiness. We find great happiness. But the culmination of all this is when we imbibe the mood of the holy places, and we take these teachings into our life and practice them as our means for growth in our spiritual life. So, of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken the teachings of Madhvacharya and planted them in his philosophical teachings of Achintya Bheda Veda Tattva. Madhvacharya taught so many things. One of the things he taught was fearlessness. It is explained that this quality of fearlessness is one of the most important qualities for success on the path of devotional service. How does fearfulness work? Let's talk about the negative. How does fearfulness work? One of the manifestations of fearfulness is afraid of losing our happiness in the material world. The fear of giving up material attachments. The fear of full surrender, which might be something that might cause me to lose something I feel very much attached to in this material world. So this is a kind of fearfulness, which is negative. But fearlessness is imbibed with the quality of knowledge. And what is that knowledge? Is that whatever you're looking for in life can be found on the path of bhakti, free from, as Radhanath Maharaj was so nicely explaining that verse in the Nectar of Devotion, Ayabhilasita sunya jnana kamar anavritam anukulena krishna silanam bhakti uttama. This desire to gain something from whatever we do. We even manifest that within devotional life. We do something, we want something, whatever it may be. Some remuneration, some exchange, even some, you know, congratulation. In other words, if there's expectations, that tinges the process of bhakti. And that's called fruitive. It may be small, it may be very small, maybe subtle and very small, but still, if it's not removed in due course of time, anything small has a tendency to become bigger. That's the nature of Kali Yuga. As you become purified and make advancement in spiritual life, your material desires and your material fevers start to reduce more and more. But if you come all the way to the border of pure devotional service and don't make that next step, and stop somewhere near the doorstep, don't knock on the door and go in, then the tendency is to go back the other way. That's the nature. The material energy will pull the living entity back towards that. So therefore, fearlessness means that if I execute devotional service with full faith in the instructions of the spiritual master, under his careful guidance, then success is guaranteed. Success is guaranteed. And there's nothing to lose in material life. The only thing you can lose in material life is suffering. Does anybody really want to hang on to suffering? No, nobody wants suffering, but that's, Prabhupada used to say that, either you're Krishna conscious or you're suffering. So coming to these holy places, there's so much to gain. Taking the darshans, associating with the devotees, and hearing about the amazing pastimes of these personalities who have taken birth here and who have spread the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead far and wide. Madhvacharya really is unbelievably amazing. One of the personal things I like about the Madhvas, I think maybe some of you also like it, is that in this refutation of Mayavad philosophy, their followers are very enthusiastic to smash anything that is not pure devotional service. It's interesting. Many, many years ago, I actually remember the year, it was 2004, 10 years ago. It was in July. I had gone to a conference in a place called Barcelona, Spain. And it was the World Parliament of Religions. And they used to have these mass world religions conferences somewhere in the world every 5 years. Every 5 years it would take place on a grand scale. So great, great personalities from different features of spiritual practice, and some quasi-material spiritual people would come. And it'd be a big assembly of workshops and forums and discussions and talks, and it was really advertised. So we went, I was there with His Holiness Rup Damodar Goswami Maharaj. And we went to one session, and it was a big session, and it was a panel discussion. And it was 5 people on the panel, and they were from different spiritual, religious, there was different Christians, and I think there was Islam as also, but there was one Madhvite on this one panel. Now, the panel was set up in such a way as that each was supposed to speak and give their understanding of their teachings and explain, and then each person would have a turn, and at the end there would be a discussion among the panel members with questions from the audience. But this Madhvite, he wouldn't let it go on like that. And I was watching, and I was with another devotee. When these other persons were speaking, he would challenge them. And I was thinking, what is he doing? He's breaking the protocol. But it kept happening that when they were talking, he would say something and challenge their philosophical teachings. And some of the organizers were getting a little concerned because they thought, this is outside of the, what are we going to do? But he was so erudite and so clear on how to take what they were saying and try to show, you know, that's not the truth. I mean, it's got some benefit. And then finally, they all acquiesced to him and let him speak. So he just started to speak, you know, Madhvacharya's philosophy. He was actually a student of Oxford University. So he was a scholar in the material sense too, but he knew the Shastras well. And I was watching, I was thinking, this is pretty good. he wasn't in the mood to just be a nice person in a discussion panel. He wanted to get that point across that this is the teachings of Madhvacharya and you should understand it. So then I got a little understanding what the Madhvites are like, you know. And it connects with their mood that, you know. And Prabhupada had that same understanding too. Yeah, well, Prabhupada, in order to keep a certain protocol, allowed some of this to go on, but at the end he would smash it all. But this Madhvite didn't even allow it to go on. He was smashing it before it was, while it was happening. So I was thinking, yeah, this is definitely Madhvacharya's mood here. So that, you know, when devotees see the clear determination, philosophical teachings of the Siddhanta that establishes the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the ultimate principle of devotion and the ultimate goal of life, then devotees become enthusiastic like that. And Prabhupada was also like that. We find that, and he was criticized. Swamiji, you're always calling everyone's fools, rascals, camels, asses, dogs, hogs, pigs, and big rascals. Prabhupada said, I'm just repeating what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Avajanti mam mudha. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga samadritaha. I'm just saying what Krishna's saying. That's my duty, to keep the Siddhanta, to keep the chastity of Krishna's teachings. But Prabhupada was also very much criticized like that. And even people would come to me, why are you a spiritual master? He's just criticizing everybody. I said, well, he's right. Just think about it. It's not that he dislikes anyone. He has compassion. And sometimes people mistake compassion for agreeing with the way you're doing things. Right? If you're my friend or if I love you, then everything you do is fine. But that's not love. That's not friendship. With the sensitivity of heart and with the concern of the welfare of the other person, one should make a difference, if one can do that, to help others come to a clearer and correct understanding. That is real friendship. That is real concern. How it's done is important, but doing it is necessary. So the Madhvites, Madhvacharya was very enthusiastic to rid the world of this Mayavad philosophy, which was so all-pervading, especially in South India, and still today, many places. Most persons who follow spiritual paths, either follow spiritual paths with two goals in mind. One, to become God, or to become as good as God, or to follow the spiritual teachings in order to increase material gain or material happiness. In other words, to worship the Lord in order to enjoy the material world better, or to get a better material position somewhere in the heavenly planets. Or even better, maybe a little better than that, to get free from material suffering, liberation like that. But that's not the ultimate principle. And anyone who accepts that, in one sense, is cheating themselves. Ultimately, the real process, which can only satisfy Savai Pum Sam Taparo Dharmo, Yato Bhakti Ahoksaje, Hoitukiya Priyata, Yayatma Supersedite, is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotion, free from any personal motivations. That's difficult. But it becomes easy when we accept the principles of bhakti into our life through the practice of glorifying the Lord and following the principles of devotional service. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, raga dvesha vimukta istu visayanindriyaistra atma visaya vahedatma prasadam arigaichchati. A nice verse. What is he saying? That those who follow rules and regulations, they're free. I was asked to give a talk not too long ago at a university in one of the most prestigious medical and scientific universities in the world in London. It's called, what is that? Imperial University, I think. Somewhere in London. I can't remember the name of it. Imperial University. So the students there who go to that college pay a lot of money, and it's hard to get in. So the question is, I had to talk about what is freedom? What is real freedom? So, you know, I was trying to explain that freedom means to get away from the material energy, which is a cause of bondage, and to come to the spiritual practice, and to do whatever you want to do, whenever you want to do, is another form of suffering and bondage. It's not freedom. So, when you're talking to students, you kind of somehow or other kind of have to be a little bit, use certain words that are kind of like catchy just to get their attention. If you get too philosophical, it's kind of like boring for them. So I said, the living being in the material world is unlimited in the limited, and in the spiritual world is limited in the unlimited. I don't know why I said it, but I did. And then one student challenged me. He said, what does that mean? I said, well, in this material world, it's a limited place, but if you develop spiritual practice, you can become free from the limitations, therefore you're unlimited within the limited. But if you make it to the spiritual consciousness and you have developed devotion to the Lord and you have freed yourself from everything material and you meant to enter into the spiritual realm, because you're not the highest, you're not God himself, you're limited within the unlimited. And for the rest of the class, all I did was debate this one student. He was very interesting. Finally, he accepted. So this idea in this material world that there is some, freedom by following rules and regulations, we become free. And to act outside of the desired or designated rules and regulations is bondage. As Krishna says in that verse, one becomes free from all attachment and aversion simply by following the principles of devotional service. And attachment and aversion are the two sides of bondage. So great souls like Madhvacharya, who have come to this world out of their own desire to uplift the conditioned souls, have left behind a wealth of knowledge. Such a powerful personality. I mean, we hear about his strength, and did you take darshan of those slabs? Did everyone go see those slabs? There's two big, long, flat rocks. He was helping his mother in some chores, and then his mother had to leave, and there was some curd in one area and there was some milk in another area. So in order to take care of the chores, he took these two slabs, which are huge, monstrous, and just placed it on. He was only a young boy at the time. The personification of the wind god. And we glorify him for his physical strength. And he used his physical strength to teach, you know, others, to destroy, you know, demons like that. But his real power was in his spiritual strength. We were seeing in this play a little demonstration of his disappearance. There's one narration in one book where it says that the devas and the heavenly planets, when Madhvacharya was about, when he was giving that last talk on the Aitreya Upanishads, which was his favorite Upanishads, he loved the Upanishads. And it says the Upanishads are the essence of the Vedas. He was speaking and absorbed in teaching the Aitreya Upanishads. And the devas, they knew that this was going to be his disappearance. So they came from everywhere and were watching and listening to this last lecture of Madhvacharya. And while he was speaking, it says in the heavenly realm, there was a glorification of his qualities and attributes prior to his disappearance. Towards the end of his lecture, it's described in one narration. Of course, there's different explanations of his disappearance, that the devas became so overwhelmed hearing that they started to shower flowers. And then the devotees who were there were also throwing flowers. And he was covered with flowers, where no one could even see him. At that point, two of his main disciples came to brush away the flowers, and when they did, he wasn't there. He had disappeared in that final glorification while speaking transcendental knowledge. Such a glorious disappearance, right? Such a glorious disappearance. Doing what he was doing through his own life, teaching from the Vedas and glorifying the Lord. So his life is amazing. And take time, and we have time to go to some of these. I think we're going to Gada Tirtha. There's four ponds that were established in this area by Parasuram. One is called Gada Tirtha, Banu Tirtha, Parasur Tirtha, and what's the other one? Danus Tirtha. Parasur Tirtha means the axe, Danus Tirtha means the bow. Banu Tirtha means the arrow, and Gada Tirtha means the club. Actually, when he was a little boy, he would go to these places and bathe. It says if you go in these places and you dip into these tirthas, you actually become free from all material contamination and you develop devotion to the Lord. When he was young, he would go, and his mother was always worried that he'd have to go so far away. So in order to please his mother, he established another tirtha, which is called Vasudev Tirtha, another pond. I think it's in this area also. Yeah, it's right here, Vasudev Tirtha. And it says that if you bathe there, you get the benefits of bathing in all the other four tirthas. So this is a very auspicious place, a very holy place. And take advantage. And this is the last day of the yatra, a nice way to conclude such a wonderful opportunity for spiritual growth by visiting all these holy places. Shri Madhvacharya ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Prajakshetra ki jai. Gaura Premanandi ki jai.